Hello and welcome to Monocle on Culture. I'm Robert Bounds. On today's show, and with a spring in our step, we're looking to the coming months to highlight what you should have your eye on in the cultural sphere. What should you be streaming, reading, or listening to? Well, our expert panel has all the answers. Among a slew of stellar recommendations, we've got the latest book from one of Britain's favourite romantic novelists, the long-awaited debut album from an indie pop darling, and Kate Winslet playing the eccentric leader of an unnamed Central European nation. What more could you want? I'm joined today by the writer and director Natti Kazambala, the TV critic and broadcaster Toby Earle, and the culture editor at the Sunday Times, Susanna Butter. Welcome all to the programme.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. Don't be shy. You're teetering on the precipice of this 29 minutes of absolutely knocking it out of the park. It's lovely to have you all round the desk. Some people know each other, some people don't. But over this next half hour, we're all going to get to know each other and judge each other's recommendations. No pressure. Toby, we're going to start with you.
Oh, man.
As well we might.
Oh, gosh. I wish I hadn't caught your eye then. It's just because I'm sat at the other end of the table.
Come on, critic and broadcaster. We're going there. We're going straight in. And we're going. We've got a clip of your first choice to get us in the mood, Toby. It is from Scoop and a Very Royal Scandal. This is a little bit of Scoop.
If I do an interview, the question is, why you?
With respect, you know how people see you.
Spell it out.
Randy Andy.
With respect.
Everything's changed. The FBI are raiding Epstein's home. You can't stay silent. South drawing room, two chairs, 6 feet apart.
It's like a Western. Make no mistake, if we don't get the tone right, the story won't be him. It'll be us.
Ooh, some good voices there. Some good proxies of people we know very well. For listeners that can't guess what we're doing and what we're looking at, where are we?
There was an interview in 2019. Not many people saw it. It was kind of a niche event. But there was a Newsnight interview. Emily Maitlis interviewed Prince Andrew, and it was really about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, the paedophile financier, as I've once seen him described. And he had died at that stage, and he was being questioned about his relationship with him. So yes, you've probably seen that interview, and it was seismic in many ways. And what we have in the television sphere is what I and some other experts might call an Armageddon / deep impact situation, where the same...
That surely needs an acronym, Toby. We'll come up with it later.
Okay. Where you have the same story being told by two different productions. So you have Scoop, which at the time of recording is not yet out on Netflix. By the time this goes out, it will be on Netflix. And later on, we'll have A Very Royal Scandal, which is coming to Prime Video. Now, in Scoop...
These are both depictions of that same interview.
Exactly.
And the lead-up and the fallout to it.
Precisely that. Thank you for doing what I should have done. Now, in Scoop, you have Gillian Anderson playing Emily Maitlis. You have Rufus Sewell playing Prince Andrew. Keely Hawes as Amanda Thirsk, who is the Duke of York's private secretary. Romola Garai's in there as well. You have Connor Swindles playing Jay Donnelly, who is the photographer who took those photos in 2010, which is where Scoop starts. Those photos of Prince Andrew and Jeffrey Epstein walking through New York as he breaks up with his friend, or so he claims.
Like a scene from Annie Hall.
Yes.
In some horrendous other universe.
Yeah. Scoop is exec produced by Sam McAllister, who is a producer on Newsnight, who fixed the interview. And Scoop sort of centres on her, really. It centres on her and how the interview came to be. I find it curious in tone. Emily Maitlis, she's very icy and aloof in this. A Very Royal Scandal, on the other hand, is exec produced by Emily Maitlis. And you have Ruth Wilson playing Emily Maitlis. You have Michael Sheen playing Prince Andrew. And Joanna Scanlon as Amanda Thirsk. And so we are going to have the same story told presumably from very different angles, particularly because the executive producers involved on both worked on that particular interview, but have their own takes on it.
So my one final question on this then, Toby, is what on earth can these do that the interview in real life didn't do? What extra drama can possibly happen other than, I mean, can fiction be stranger than fact?
This is my exact issue. We saw the interview. We watched the interview. I don't think anyone who saw the interview was left anything other than, and it's a rare deployment of this word, which I think is entirely justified, agog at what took place. Pizza Express in Woking. I can't sweat. All these stories, a straightforward shooting party, all the little stories, all the little phrases, everyone watched that and was kind of had their minds blown by what they were seeing. Is it interesting fixing an interview? Yeah, maybe.
Maybe they'll dramatise all of the lead up to this very show.
Maybe. Hope so. I really hope so. And I don't know who's going to play me, but I'm excited to find out.
Some texts.
So, yeah, I find it interesting that they've decided to make two different pieces about the same event, which we've all watched. How can it be, quote, improved upon?
I expect we will all watch it nonetheless. Scoop is out now on Netflix, A Very Royal Scandal. It is coming out later this year on Amazon Prime Video. Toby, thank you very much for giving us the lowdown on those two sides of the same coin. Susanna, we're going to kick off books with you and something new, always exciting, from Percival Everett. Where are we with James?
We're on the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
In quite familiar territory for anyone who's read Huckleberry Finn, which I have a very long time ago.
Yeah, very long time ago.
I think I had to for school or something. But and I do remember enjoying it. But
the culture editor speaks, I like that.
Don't tell anyone. But no, Percival Everett, who is, for those who don't know, I think a very interesting and entertaining American writer. He's probably best known now for his book Erasure, which the film American Fiction was based on, about a black writer who gets told that he's not doing things right. So he writes this pastiche of kind of what people expect from like cliched black tropes. And it's a funny send-up.
And this was American Fiction, which won some Oscars.
Yeah.
This year. Yeah.
And then The Trees, which was Booker nominated, and is about white people getting lynched by black people. Yeah, so for this book, he's telling the story of Huckleberry Finn, but from the point of view of Jim, the escaped slave, and it's him and Huck going on their adventures together. And he doesn't shy away from kind of the controversial things. He uses the N-word. Percival Everett has this way of writing that it's kind of funny and shocking and brave, and it's completely engrossing. And obviously it's an election year in America, and Huck's dad is kind of, you can quite imagine him as a Trump supporter, hating powerful black people. It's a very interesting book.
And I guess
brave
this
to have done it.
Yeah, and I suppose this journey, the journey undertaken in Huckleberry Finn is undertaken, but the voice is that of Jim, who is kind of, can't read and write in Mark Twain's original book. So he's got a different sort of power he's got a lot more power, I suppose, in this book. And I suppose that meandering journey allows many things to happen, many thoughts and setups to take place.
Yeah, the classic journey novel where everyone discovers themselves. No, he's very well read. He thinks about John Locke and the creation of slavery, and he has a hallucination about Voltaire. He's left his wife and daughter behind, and before he leaves, he's teaching his daughter how to read, how to talk, kind of how white people don't expect anything of her, but how she can subvert their expectations.
Yes, I've read that there's some sort of ventriloquizing. There's this kind of like formation of this kind of quote unquote slave language or whatever, that everyone can speak perfectly normally, but they have to, in order to have their make their masters feel at home, they have to put on this ridiculous patois.
Yeah,
and I suppose this is Percival Everett playing with people's expectation of language, like he did with Erasure, which became American Fiction.
Yeah.
He's a language meister, right? Isn't he? I mean,
he's a writer, and he's a language. He kind of enjoys that side of it, that side of the craft. It's not kind of, straightforwardly told, I suppose.
Susanna, thank you very much. That is Percival Everett's James. It's published on the 11th of April by Mantle Pan Macmillan. Thank you very much. Natty, we're coming to you. Music time. Should we go straight in with a clip from your first choice?
Sure.
Thank you. Vibes, gauzy vibes. Who and what and where are we here, Nessie?
It's a big year for Houston, Texas. Beyonce album and now Krungbin coming back.
Yeah.
I think it's their third solo project, A La Sala. Thai funk infused, all sorts of influences. I just think they have a really like refreshing and comforting way of approaching music that not a lot of bands do well enough to continue to be interesting. Yeah.
They've got such a kind of recognisable sort of brand, I suppose. This kind of funky, funk rock, easy listening kind of vibe that they have.
Yeah.
I hate to say easy listening, but we all feel that. We should put this last because I don't want to do anything after that.
I know.
I just want to have a smoke up. it's all right, Toby, it's not the BBC.
The bassist, Laura Ocha, I was just reading something she had said about that in terms of like when they first founded, talking about this idea of like actually having a formula and like not just making music for the sake of being as experimental as possible, but actually exploring the box that they want to be in. And I thought that was a really interesting way of sort of putting that kind of safety and security that you can sometimes look for in music like this that isn't the most exciting or like, you know, trendy thing to talk about, but you know what you're getting when you go into their project. And once you finish rinsing the next one, there they are with another.
And I have to ask you, does A La Sala, does this bring the sound on? Does this bring the ideas on? Because also they are pretty much always vocal free, right? This is instrumental music, 99% of it is vocal free.
Yeah, it's definitely not lyric based. I think the sound does feel always quite fresh and new, even if it is familiar. Their last project was actually with the son of Ali Fakatore, Vio Fakatore, and like that was a very different vibe.
That was lovely as well, right?
Yeah, it's so good. They've done a project with Leon Bridges. They do sort of still experiment, and there is, I don't know, I think they have that careful way of finding the balance of like their signature without repeating themselves and without sort of like drumming, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And again, we're going to talk about this with some of your other choices, I think, later in the show. But I mean, I'm think obviously firm festival favourites for this summer as well throughout the UK and the EU. Okay.
Well, and they even sound better live, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I'm a real fan.
It's such a warm... Well, it's such a thing. I mean, that's what every band kind of wants, to have that recognisable sound where it comes on the radio, you stream it, it's at a party, everyone knows exactly what it is. And everyone might go, oh, you like... And everyone... But by that point, you're sold, right?
100%.
You're snagged. It is A La Sala. It is new from Krungbin, and it's out on the 5th of April. The record label is Dead Oceans. Toby, coming back to you... For a taste of the regime, we've got a clip to kick us off.
You all need to be better at being normal. When you're not normal, it makes me feel like you're telling me that I'm not normal, which makes me distrust all of you and want you to be dead. So, just be better at being normal.
Anyone who dares insult me or my country shall feel my fury.
Madam, if you are indeed proposing an invasion...
No one is proposing an invasion, no one. Call it an expression of peace and love. Something like that. Something fun. Snappy. Yeah? Good.
That was, as promised in the introduction, Kate Winslet being the Chancellor, dictator of an unnamed Central European country.
That's it. I mean, she plays Elena, the Chancellor, like you say, dictator, of this unnamed Central European country. And if you have a Roy family-shaped hole in your life, this may well be the programme to sort of fill it, because it also features despotic behaviour and at times utterly unforgivable behaviour from people who are very powerful. But yeah, Kate Winslet doing comedy. And it is a dark comedy about power, those who hold power, and the actions of those who really should be thinking perhaps more kindly of those around them, I suppose. Kate Winslet doing comedy is just so great. I think the last HBO project of hers was Mayor of Easttown, which is obviously an enormous success. And here she plays Eleanor, who is, yes, a dictator of this Central European country. She is wild, unpredictable, childlike. From what I understand, it makes her very much sound like Elizabeth from Blackadder the Second.
You know, one of my favourite all-time comic creations.
Miranda Richardson's portrayal of Elizabeth I, this childlike lunatic whose capriciousness knows no bounds, whose loyalty knows no bounds up until there are no bounds. And here in the regime, you have Chancellor Eleanor striking up a relationship, a kind of sort of draws in a soldier by the name of Herbert Zubach as a confidant. He becomes her right-hand man and she starts to lean on him quite heavily. And he is not what you might call a sort of a velvet glove. He is the iron fist within an iron glove, perhaps. And this is a send-up, really, of politics and a satire of what power does to people. And I know, right, it's kind of a heavy time we live in, and it has been for what feels like forever, but it also feels quite timely to be looking, examining what motivates those people in these positions. And it is based on Ceausescu, Putin, and people like that. And she's a germaphobe in this. She has problems with the air and people mustn't breathe on her. And so it has all these quirks that you expect of people who occupy high positions, entirely paranoid, yet at the same time can do great damage to anyone around them.
Again, it's kind of a bit like with Scoop. I wondered this thinking about Sacha Baron Cohen, The Dictator.
Yes.
Whether fact is funnier than fiction. As you say, we live in such a mad, crazy... Just this year, we've got the war in Ukraine, we've got the war in the Middle East, etc.
Yep.
This has to do a different job than it might have had to have done when it was commissioned, I wonder.
Potentially. Mm. But I think, is it also not a way to kind of cope and understand with how these things happen and why... not allowed to happen, but how they do happen and how people then try to sort of deal with it or not.
Yeah, it looks like great fun. That is The Regime. Thank you, Toby. And that is out today in the UK on Sky Atlantic and Now. Susanna, sorry we don't have any clips for your books. We need a drum roll and then we kind of... But you're going to tell us about You Are Here, new from the estimable David Nicholls.
You Are Here will probably be called One Day for Old People.
Well, I notice... you can tell us about the plot. It sounds cosy.
So, we're on familiar territory in the kind of unlikely romance stakes. It's Marnie and Michael are both... I mean, they're not that old. They're in their 40s.
Chill out.
they're both recently divorced, have kind of given up on finding love and also slightly on life, particularly in Marnie's case, but luckily they've got a bossy best friend in common called Cleo, who organises a walking holiday in the Lake District for them. And Michael loves walking ever since his divorce. He's a geography teacher and he's just been spending every weekend out there in rain and hail and worse weather than we're having at the moment. in kind of grotty old walking boots and jumpers, not talking to anyone, just walking through horrible conditions.
So you have really. Bonk buses and you have cagoule buses.
Right. Soak bus, I don't know.
Amorous in an anorak.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds like Lonely Hearts. And then Marnie hates walking. She lives in London by herself. She's a sub-editor. Copy editor for books, but she gets convinced and spends a lot of money on brand new walking kit, heavy bag, gets blisters, all of that. There's some other people on the holiday, but somehow these two end up together. Everyone else goes home because the weather's too horrible, and Michael decides he wants to walk across the country from Cumbria to North Yorkshire, from coast to coast.
This is the point at which we'd have a saxophone solo if we had some clips playing. And they get it.
And you can sort of almost guess what happens next. There's a few twists. I don't know, I feel like One Day is sort of clouded David Nicholls, the recent Netflix adaptation, which I didn't like very much. I thought it kind of was quite dragged out.
People of a certain age do have a soft spot for the novel, I suppose.
Exactly.
Still, right? There are very few bookshelves that don't boast that orange spine.
And he's got that way, David Nicholls has that way of just tapping into something that most humans have and kind of giving you that warm... He's like the Richard Curtis in his heyday of novels. And it is very, very well done and I enjoyed it a lot.
I think we know where we are. We're in familiar territory with You Are Here. It's new from David Nicholls and that is published on the 23rd of April by Scepter. Thank you, Susanna. Natty, should we dive in with a clip?
Sounds good.
Care what you do with your life. I hope you just take it easy.
And That Is New. What a Devastating Turn of Events is the name of the LP. The artist is Rachel Chinuriri. For those, I won't say living under a rock, but who is and
where
is...
Under the
is...
age of 30. Same thing.
No, we're mixing it up. If you were David Nichols, and you wanted to... So tell us a little bit about Rachel.
Rachel is a Zimbabwean-British singer-songwriter, performer, artist, who has been, I was saying before, sort of gearing up for a few years. She's had a lot of TikTok success. That's an app where people go and... No, joking. I'm going to stop that now.
Touché.
She's had a lot of TikTok success with a couple of songs that she released a good few years ago. But she's also just a really exciting sort of indie rock pop act prospect, very vocal about her own struggles and like ambitions doing that, looking the way that she does in the UK, and just sort of I think just challenging our expectations is at the core of what she's been doing and putting out. Even the artwork for this and the whole aesthetic of this album, which is her debut, is sort of like a reclamation of these like inherently like British iconographies and the St. George's flag, which I know has been trending recently. So yeah, this is her debut, and it's set to be like a really great amalgamation of like all of her influences. There's a track called The Hills, which is out, which is super angsty and sludgy and grungy. Never Need Me, which we heard, is sort of like a heartbreak anthem. And yeah, she's just a really singular voice, I think, and is really sort of stretching her own boundaries and like the boundaries of the industry that we're in today, I think.
And I say there's, and as you're sort of suggesting, maybe Natty, there's something about expectation about a person like this making really great pop music, simply pop music. Is there something of that in it? That's how I got from the tracks I've heard so far.
Pop and indie, she's specifically been calling out as like, I think there's a lot of misgenering that can go on when it comes to young black women in music, and sort of being everything is added with a dash soul whenever they make a song. And so she's been very sort of like clear about how people should be describing her and like what her influences are, calling on people like Daughter from back in the day and like sort of like that indie folk songwriting as her biggest inspirations, and just asking people to do the same.
And big like Parlophone, big label, festivals this summer, so she is exactly in that territory that 25 years ago, someone that looked slightly different might be.
Yeah.
As you say, the label thing is such, I mean, whether you interview an artist or whether you are reviewing a record from an artist, that labelling thing can be deadly, right?
100%. And I think this is the moment that she's got to sort of present this body of work, and she feels like she's on the runway for takeoff. So My Darling is probably her biggest song, and I think that a couple of her tunes have sort of taken on a life of their own, but this is her moment to sort of say, like, this is who I am and this is what I want to be.
And the album is called What a Devastating Turn of Events, which
very
I think is suitably...
Rock.
Well, yes, also some slightly Dorothy Parker-ish.
I think or like Fall Out Boy, almost.
I think it's very cute. Rachel Chinuriri, the album is called What a Devastating Turn of Events. Imagine saying that in Noel Coward's accent. It works perfectly. It is, as discussed, out on the 3rd of May via Parlophone. Check her out on many a live stage as well this summer. Toby, back to you for The Boys, season 4 of The Boys on Amazon Prime.
All democracies fail because people are fucking stupid. But if you crush the masses, who builds your monuments? Who tongues your taint? The people will tear it apart themselves. You just gotta nudge them a little.
Okay, we're in exciting trailer territory.
Yeah, and you did hear that phrase, by the way. If you're wondering, did I actually hear that phrase used? Yes, you did actually hear that phrase being used regards to the tongue. And I should point out, The Boys, while it is centred around a group of superheroes, it is grotesque, violent, graphic. I mean, it comes from a graphic, and I mean a very graphic novel, but it tells the superhero story in a very different way. I think everyone around this table, and perhaps everyone listening, has probably seen superheroes more than members of their own family over the last several years, but this takes a very different approach. It's a satire of superheroes, of capitalism, of consumerism and politics. And whereas Superman was concerned with truth, justice and the American way, the superheroes at the heart of this are concerned with untruths and injustice and American mayhem. So the lead character in this, you would argue, the centre of it is a superhero called Homelander, who's bedecked in a suit which echoes the stars and stripes. He is literally wearing those Trump golden trainers. I mean, it is so painful. And Homelander himself is painfully Aaron. And he is a seething, broiling mass of arrogance and hatred, and it's all wrapped up in a mum's apple pie smile. I mean, he's terrifying. Anthony Starr, who plays him, I really feel like he's been overlooked for awards time and time again. It's just an incredible portrayal. But this really, this show, and even if it is, even though it's its fourth series, is an incredible commentary, really, on the last going on 10 years of what we've witnessed, particularly in American politics, the divisiveness within American politics and the desire to whip up hatred and resentment. And as you'll have noticed from that trailer there, they talk about allowing the people to basically unpick democracy themselves. And that's where we kind of find ourselves at the end of Series 3 going to Series 4. At the same time, there's a politician climbing up towards the White House. She herself is a superhuman, using her powers to covertly kill off rivals and to whip up fear and to play on that fear to propel her into the top office. So, like I say, it's a parody of consumerism, of capitalism and politics. And it is wrapped up in one very bloody, darkly funny package.
Well, thank you, Toby. The Boys is out on Amazon Prime Video in June. The American election, if you fancy looking at that, is on in October. Susanna, we're going to come to you for All Fours, new from Miranda July. And sounds like we're very close to home with Miranda's in Miranda world. Give us a little bit on this.
Well, you definitely don't want me to read this out because it's incredibly graphic.
Right.
So it's about an unnamed woman, narrator, who is turning 45 and decides to go, it's another journey, like in gym, and decides to drive from her home in California to New York to celebrate by herself. And she's got a husband and a child at home. She never says the gender of the child. And she makes it one day. She stops in this random place called Monrovia, where there's not much. It's a kind of middle of nowhere, Hicksville, yeah, American town. And she meets a guy at the Hertz rental car and ends up having this affair with him and just staying there for the whole 2 weeks and pretending to her husband that she's in New York. And there's a lot of sex scenes, and she really, really does go there to the point where you are a bit exhausted at one point. You're just like, okay, we get it.
And then, okay, yeah.
And it's not.
Point out Hertz is spelled H-E-R-T-Z.
And then it's kind of it's a novel in two parts. So there's that bit, and then there's the bit where she goes home to her husband and child and is kind of thinking about what's happened. And there's the possibilities raised that she might be a little bit perimenopausal and this might have been her last great sexual hurrah.
Right.
But at least she enjoyed it. I really like Miranda July's writing. She does lots of things. She's a filmmaker and an artist. Some of her short stories are that she writes a short story about someone who meets a famous person on an airplane and they have this conversation over their flight that's absolutely fantastic. And she's got this ability to just capture very everyday walking around the house feelings that are funny and identifiable. There's a bit where she's talking about motherhood where she's like, it's just making a lot of sandwiches and never made any sandwiches in my life before and now I'm just making all these sandwiches. So it's
what's the sort of prose style of this? Because you said it's very sort of graphic, it's got a lot of sex in it, it sounds very funny. I feel very sorry for the husband. Let's not call him Mike Mills. how does she engage with the reader? Is she looking you in the eye or is she being sly Miranda July?
No, she's quite straight. She's quite interior monologue with a lot of funny conversations. And this woman is in a kind of art. She's got a sort of unspecified creative job in LA and she's got lots of friends who she's able to be very open with and have funny conversations with. And then she meets some other unlikely characters in the middle of nowhere, California as well. So it's kind of, yeah, conversational, personal.
I can't believe they didn't call it Car Hire. Nonetheless, it is out on the
30th.
Exactly. It's published by Canongate on the 13th of May and it is called All Fours, new from Miranda July. Thank you, Susanna. Natalie, we're going to end with you with possibly a huge saxophone solo. Who knows? Should we have a clip?
Thank you.
Okay, new from Kamasi Washington, no less. What's he up to this time?
That old guy.
Yeah,
you know what? I realised as well on my way here that two of my choices are pretty much lyricless, and I think that says a lot about where I'm at the moment. But this is supposed to be Kamasi Washington's dance album, as declared by himself, in more of the literal sense than the traditional sense. I think it's called Fearless Movement, and I think it's a lot about, to use his own words, sort of like expressing spirit through the body in the same way that music can be. And I think it sounds really exciting. Like, I'm gritting my teeth to not sound overly pretentious talking about jazz on the radio, but like...
Freestyle it, Nessie.
I know, I'm like, oh, I'm not going to listen to this back. It's got this frenetic energy, but it does have this kind of like giddiness and urgency. And I think he is, we were talking about this before as well, like he can somehow make jazz still feel really surprising. An 8-minute song and you get to minute 7 and you're like, wow, I feel like I'm levitating. But it's got contributions from Andre 3000 as well, who's obviously released his own instrumental album last year, Thundercat, George Clinton, Terrace Martin, BJ the Chicago Kid and D-Smoke. And it's actually his first solo project full length since 2018. So it has been a long time. Yeah, and I'm really excited to see where it goes. He's only released 2 songs so far, one of them which was already out in a different sense before.
It danceable? So it's like, it's a sort of like, is dance is the idea and it's dance as a kind of genre, I suppose, rather than whether or not you can dance to it. They used to make dance music that you couldn't dance to, you know, like Fortet and stuff, supposedly. But what about this? Has the Casimbala knee been shaken?
I cannot confirm or deny.
Okay.
I guess it depends how good your dancing skills are. There's actually a video for Prologue, which is the song we just heard, which is 8 minutes of some very intense dancing. So it can be done. I think it's going to get more psychedelic, I have a feeling, and even more experimental in parts. But there's definitely, like, it's not sit around and like have a glass of wine. It's you can march to this, you can sort of like go about your business. And I actually do think that jazz is a genre of the summer, despite what people think, you know, like cooking dinner, frolicking around the city.
Sounds like, great. It sounds great evenings. In open air, right? If you get it, if the balance is right, it sounds gorgeous.
100%.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see where this album takes me.
I love it. That is called Fearless Movement by Kamasi Washington. It's out on the 3rd of May via Young Turks. Thank you, Natty. And that is all for this week. My thanks to Natty Casimbala, Toby Earle and to Susanna Butter for all of their recommendations. Monocle on Culture is produced by Sophie Monaghan-Coombs and Steph Chungu. And Steph also edits the show. We'll be back at the same time next week. But until then, from me, Robert Bound, thanks for tuning in.